welcome to our Biz Huddle podcast. I'm your host, Mitch Cuthbert, Creative Director at Baker Creative. If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it.
And really thinking about how often do we feel like we have a full space for us?
Hi, Julia. Thanks for joining us on our podcast. We're so excited to have you.
I am so happy to be here today. Thanks for the invitation, Michelle.
So what attracted you originally to the field of counseling and mental health therapy?
Oh, gosh. It goes way back. It's sort of an origin story. When I was 14 years old and sitting in the back seat of my best friend at the time, her mother's sedan, as she was running into the grocery store to grab a few things, we were sitting in the car with the radio on. It was later in the evening. I think it was like 8:30 or 9 at night. I was sleeping over at her house and her mom had to run out. So we came with her. And on the radio show, the radio station that was on, all of a sudden at 9 o'clock, there was a program that came on. And, you know, whether or not it was appropriate for 14-year-old girls, it was sex, lies, and audio tape. And it was a call-in relationship show. So it sounds kind of scandalous in the title, but it was actually a call-in relationship advice show on the radio with someone who was listening to people's problems, helping them with their problems, helping them work through their relationship issues. People were like talking about real things that were going on in their lives. And I'm like, what is this? And then this woman was just like helping them work through stuff. And she called herself a clinical counselor. And I was like, what is a clinical counselor? And how do I become one of those one day? And I kind of filed it into the back of my mind once I realized that you needed a master's degree to become a counselor. And for one reason or another, I can't remember why, I didn't really see myself as like a bookish kind of school person and was like, the least amount of education I can do to be the most successful, that's the road I want to take. And I kind of filed away being like, you know, let's come up with some other options because I don't want to be in school for that long. And, you know, lo and behold, I did my undergrad degree, came out with a general arts degree, shocked and appalled at the fact that no one was banging on my door, begging to offer me a high paying, you know, wonderful, rewarding, fulfilling position. I'm like, wait a second, where is that? Got a job working barely below minimum wage, humbled me to death. And, you know, I kind of spent some time dabbling around in some different things, taking a few different kinds of courses, some training programs. I am a post and prenatal doula, if anyone is interested, trained and, well, no longer certified, but I'm also a trained and certified ESL teacher, you know, kind of dancing around in these different careers until I finally just realized that, you know, this is what I'm meant to do. I am meant to be a therapist. I got to stop being a weenie and avoiding doing the hard work that is required. I'm doing all these other things to avoid doing the thing that I want to do. I've probably spent way more energy and effort and worked way harder to do these other things, little bits of things that I don't want to do, instead of just concentrating that effort on the thing I do want to do. And that's sort of how I got the pep in my step to get going on this and get myself educated and get myself into grad school and get myself through grad school. And then sort of the rest is history. So that was sort of a long answer, but it really started when I was about 14 years old, listening to Rona Raskins give relationship advice on sex, lies, and audio tape on the radio station Z95.3 right here in Vancouver.
Aww. So what do you think the biggest misconception is about therapy?
That only people who are really having a hard time in life need therapy. I think everyone needs a therapist. Mm-hmm. I think there, you know, no one in this life rides for free. We all have stuff. We all have struggles. We all have issues and things. And why not work on things that are stopping us to feel good so that we can, right? It's kind of optimizing life. And a therapist in a lot of ways helps us optimize life, doesn't just help us you know, deal with our problems. It also helps us work through them so that we can also then learn how to optimize our lives. And I really, you know, one of my first jobs was working at a clinic downtown Vancouver in sort of the sort of gay neighborhood. And so a lot of my clients were gay men. And I remember them wearing their, you know, therapy with a badge of honor and being like, you know, like, who's your therapist? Oh, Julie is my therapist. Well, my therapist is Amanda. Oh, wow. Well, I've heard Amanda's great. Well, I've heard Julie is great. You know, they just sort of like compare and be like, yeah, like this is my thing. Who's your therapist? It's not even like, oh, do you go to therapy? It's almost like this thing of like, yeah, of course I go to therapy. Therapy is the thing. Who wouldn't go to therapy? And I loved that. There was no hiding. There was no shame. There was no, you know, any kind of negative connotation. It was like this, yeah, like everyone who's everyone has a therapist. I'm like, that is, I feel like, how we need to be existing in our society and really just embrace the fact that we all have stuff that we could be doing and working through and dealing with to optimize our lives.
Absolutely. So we've worked with some diverse audiences in multicultural space, and we realize that there's a lot of cultures that are kind of afraid of therapy and they don't know how to, what box to put it in, right? So if someone is in that situation, what would you say to them? Because it takes courage to step out, right? Because it's not warm. Any advice for that?
You know, and I know I've had a few people that I went to grad school with who were from different cultures and then really struggling with their parents not being supportive of them doing this, to be like, why would you go to pay someone that you don't know to talk about your problems? Just tell your friends, just talk to your friends and don't share your private information with a stranger. And that's not normal. And why would you pay someone? We could just have a conversation with a friend. And, you know, and there can be some of that around it, but then really understanding that there are skill sets that therapists have that are different than talking about a friend. And obviously, you know, we go to school, we learn a lot, but then there's also something that's really, I'm going to use a jargony word here, but cathartic. So really helpful and healing and beneficial to having a space that is all yours for that, you know, 50 minute hour. Mm-hmm. And really thinking about how often do we feel like we have a full space for us with other relationships. And even if we have a good friend who is willing to listen to us, go on and kind of help us sort through an issue for an entire hour, how many of us in the process of that have things going through our head like, oh, I shouldn't be talking about myself so much. Oh, I wonder if they're getting bored with me. Oh, I wonder if they're getting annoyed with me. Oh, I should ask them about themselves so I'm not hogging all the space. Oh, now I feel kind of guilty. Oh, now I feel like I owe them. Oh man, what might they be thinking about me since I've like talked for this whole hour about all these things that I'm struggling with, mm-hmm. right? And we carry that mental load often when we're talking to friends about it. Whereas with a therapist, you can just go in, you know, freely and just take up that space for whatever it is you need it for, and know that you have an educated, trusted professional to know how the best ways to help you work through things, right? They have the tools and the resources. And so really being able to see it like that, that a therapeutic relationship is a relationship, but it's a different kind of relationship that doesn't come with the strings that we often feel are attached to bringing our issues to our friendships.
Well said. Totally well said. Because I do think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and it's hard to explain it to someone who doesn't get it. And that was very useful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, and you know, you've done a lot of things in your professional career. Is there one thing that you're most proud of?
I would say right now, Michelle, you might not be surprised to hear this, but my membership community, the Shift Society, and I know that you have heard of the Shift Society for a period of time. And that was sort of this idea that birthed a few years ago, be like, I want to create a membership community where I can teach people the best of what I know to be the most effective in helping people move through their biggest struggles, especially with things like anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, feeling stressed, feeling overwhelmed. As a result, you know, that those main things that we focus on there, how I teach and what I teach also covers more significant things that people are struggling with, like trauma, like more kind of complex mental health issues. I don't call it a therapy group. I call it a therapeutic coaching group. So just, you know, to have that kind of clear distinction there, but building that membership community, giving people the tools and the resources and the teaching. And then also what has become the most powerful part is the connection, is the community, is the common humanity, knowing that we're not alone, not trying to figure things out alone, having a place where you can go to be seen, to be heard, to support, to get support, to work through issues, to have conversations, and created that with people that have come in from all over the world and from all different walks of life, but with this same desire for better, to be feeling better, to be having better, to be creating better, to be living better, and this honest and eager desire for that in their lives. And so this community has become much bigger than just me teaching what the best of what I have learned and developed in my career as a therapist. And it's become this incredibly beautifully loving and connected, inspiring and meaningful group of humans who are there with and for each other. So that, I would say, what has become so much bigger than just me has been the best thing of my career. People have met their best friends in the group. People have been, you know, changed their lives in huge ways through this work in this type of way with this community. So I'm pretty stinking humbled and grateful for that.
Do you feel like it's one of the most fulfilling part of your work?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love my one-on-one clients. Don't get me wrong. I love that. But there's just something that comes from going into a group and the energy that comes when a collective group of humans are there with the same desire and with the same goals. They might have different goals in what they're working on, but the same goal to be feeling better, to be showing up better, to be creating better, to be loving better, to be contributing better. And just people that have this deep desire for better in life. And it's really inspiring. There's so many incredible humans in there.
So how do you see your book and your practice and the online community different than other ones that are out there?
That's a great question, Michelle. And I don't really know what else is out there. I kind of just stay focused on my work with my people, keeping my eyes on my own journey. So I would say what can be a little bit different about it is that we're not focused on one specific issue. So I remember this when I was sort of building out my business and people are like, who's your ideal client? Like, is it men? Is it women? Is it mothers? Is it entrepreneurs? Is it firefighters? Like, who is it? What is it? What stage of life are they in? And I could not define it. And it was driving me crazy. Like, what is this unifying feature? Because there's definitely a unifying feature to the people that are drawn to me, but I don't know what it is. And I defined this recently and I could see it clearly. And it makes so much sense that it's not a person who is in a particular stage or demographic in life. It is a type of human being who orients themselves in life as a highly sensitive person. Mm-hmm. So someone who is a big feeler tends to be more on the compassionate side, more on the feeling side, more on the empathic side, more on just sort of sensitive in every way, you know, more sensitive to things like lighting, more sensitive to textures, more sensitive to changes in mood in a room, more sensitive to just their own emotions. They feel things bigger. And sometimes that can make being a human, being a highly sensitive person, I can speak from experience, it can sometimes make being a human a really hard thing, but it can also make it one of the best things in the world because for better or worse, we feel things deeply. We live deeply. We love deeply. And that can come with its own set of struggles, but it can also come with so much more depth of beauty in life. So really teaching those kinds of people how to kind of manage the part of being a highly sensitive human that makes it hard, and really embrace and lean more into the parts that make it incredible. So that is the unifying feature of the people that I am teaching to. And yeah.
But it's also the human condition that you speak to, and the get curious, I think, is what makes
yeah.
it. Because I don't hear a lot of that around, is get curious. Look what's going on with you, that self-assessment, and then really looking at all these tools. I think that's quite different, rather than a lot of times you see a lot of things on YouTube where there's a talking head and it's just, they just blast right in, rather than, are you sure it's you? You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then that's so good. I love that you brought that up, Michelle, because that's been sort of one of the catchphrases that we use a lot in the Shift Society, is like, really just get curious what's coming up from you without judgment. Mm-hmm. Right? Without assessing whether this is right or wrong or good or bad, or what you're thinking or feeling is right or wrong or good or bad. Like, what, just get curious what's coming up for you and why. Mm-hmm. And let's take this to a deeper level, and let's get more into that self-understanding without going into that over self-analysis and, you know, trying to like analyze everything we do or say, and where is this coming from, but really just more of an air of openness and curiosity, understanding that we're all doing things for a reason. We're all thinking in certain ways for a reason. We're all feeling things for a reason. Mm-hmm. So what is actually going on there, and how do we kind of look at it and work it out in that way, instead of, you know, just automatically going to like, well, you should just do this different, or you should just do that. And you just need to think positive, or you just need to be more grateful, or you just need to let it go. And it's like, not all of those things are bad things, but the reason why it's not so easy to do is because it's only kind of scratching the surface of stuff. So what happens if we look a little deeper and kind of create that self-understanding, instead of just sort of that emotional bypassing,
like a band-aid? So I think you have the sessions, and yes, you attend the sessions, but the exercises not only make you take a moment outside of what's going on with you, like the thought ladders and other things like that, and I think it gives a little direction, and then you can always go in and replay things, so you're not like, okay, what did she say again? And then you're, you know, when you have a moment when your kid's asleep and you can slide in and just kind of do it.
Yes. Yeah. And that process, and that's for me, like, I'm a therapist, and there's so much art in therapy, but there's also a lot of science in human psychology. And there's sort of schools that of psychology, human psychology, that go kind of more in the kind of artistic way, and the kind of more, you know, more explorative, more that way. And then there's also ones that tend to go into more kind of step-by-step, a little bit more like scientific model kind of way, like, here's your cause, here's your effect. Mm-hmm. Right? And so I love both. I love both. I love sort of the exploration, but I also am really drawn to structure. Really like structure. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I designed the Shift Society, is giving like a structure, a process. Here's how to do it. That's, you know, and it's cognitive therapy based with mindfulness, radical acceptance, and self-compassion sort of tied in there. We can kind of bundle up the philosophy that I use to teach from, or the psychological models I use to teach from. And so I really like having a structure as well. So that's the other kind of person that I speak to, is people that like to have like an outline, right? Don't need to have every single little detail filled in, but you need an outline, some guiding principles to walk yourself through, so that there is that sort of comfort in the structure, that direction in the structure.
But I also identify in that some of the target audiences, they have to be ready. It's a readiness factor. So yeah. If you're not ready, then it's what you put into it.
Totally.
Yeah,
absolutely. And yeah. That's like anything, right? Like if you want things to be different, you have to do something different, and you have to be ready to do it, or at least have a deep enough desire that you trust that the readiness will follow the desire.
You almost have to believe in it to see the results. You can't just, you know, like I always tell my clients sometimes, you know, you can say you're this kind of company, but I also can sit in a garage and say I'm a Cadillac. Doesn't make me a Cadillac. I'm just sitting in a garage in a chair. You have to do the work. You have to make it work. I mean,
you have to do the work.
You have to do the work.
Right. So you have to do the work.
So being a content producer and an author and been on social media for a while, what was the biggest thing you learned from it? Because you've been on a couple of different platforms and things like that.
That is a really good question. Most people, contrary to what a lot of experiences are on social media, mm-hmm. most people are good. Not insofar as like their fundamental being is good. That's not up for me to decide. But they're just people going through life wanting the same things that we all want. To feel seen, to feel heard, to feel valued, to feel loved, to feel connected, to feel like we belong. Mm-hmm. And even the people that don't present as the most lovely still want the same things. Some really incredible humans out there in the world. And I feel like I get to experience a lot of them.
I think the other thing I find interesting is you made a comment that you don't believe everything is by chance. Like you made a comment that things don't just happen to happen, right? There's a thing behind it. You know, I can't remember the saying. It's like, when something happens, there must be a reason, blah, blah, blah.
So a little bit different than that, Michelle. I don't think that everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
I don't think I could tell that to someone who had been through something extremely painful or horrific.
Right.
And to reduce their experience to a lesson to come from it. You know, that happened because they needed to be taught something or realize something. But I think that we can create meaning from whatever it is. And it's a concept in the trauma community called post-traumatic growth. So if we can use whatever you have been through as something that I'm going to do with it, other than stay stuck in the pain and suffering from it. Mm-hmm. So not everything happens for a reason, but I can create meaning, purpose, growth, learning from whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So I get to decide what I do with it instead of that thing defining me. I decide what I do with it.
So you have a lot of things going on in your world. How do you stay grounded? How do you stay sane? In the platforms, in the practice.
You think I'm sane? Well, I am flattered. You know, Michelle, I exercise a lot. I get outside. I move my body a lot. I love my work. My work keeps me grounded. And I also, you know, I don't always stay sane. I have my moments. I have my, you know, I call them little, you know, mentee bees every once in a while, little mental breakdowns where I'm like, oh, it just feels like too much and too hard and I'm too tired. And, you know, I have my moments and then I, you know, in the concept of radical acceptance is creating space for all of our experiences as humans. And it's part of being human. It's part of being human to sometimes feel like everything is hard and nothing has gone wrong if everything isn't always going right. You know, it's part of that 50-50 in life that I've never promised it would always be perfect. And it's not possible for it to be. So we accept all of it, that sometimes things are hard and we be with ourselves through that, in and through it. We catch ourselves when we fall instead of kick ourselves. And we make that commitment to create space for all of it. And so for me, that's been a huge thing, is to just stop judging myself. I just don't judge myself anymore. I do not judge myself. I've committed to letting myself be an imperfect being. And that takes so much pressure off. And it actually, you know, it creates less mental breakdowns because I'm not putting all this pressure on myself to have it all together all the time. I'm not putting all this pressure on myself to always have it all figured out. I'm not putting all this pressure on myself to always, you know, I try my best to show up as emotionally mature on the outside, but I don't always feel all that emotionally mature on the inside. Sometimes it takes me a little bit to get there. What's that saying that Michelle Obama, she said, you know, when they go low, I go medium, because God's still working on me. Yeah, like just sort of giving ourselves space to be human and really tuning into what do I need that, what do I need to feel good, right? What do I need to be doing to feel good? And I'm such a, such an advocate of letting ourselves feel good in life. You know, there are hard things. We're not always going to feel good and things are not always easy, but when there's joy available, let's take it. And so for me, I love moving. I love talking to friends. I love my work. I love spending time with my kids. I love being outside. I love, you know, just planning adventures and eating good food. And those are all the things I love. So I'm always thinking about like, how can I add more of those things into my life? And those are all things that I look forward to, that I enjoy, that bring me joy, and that help keep me grounded and help sustain me. We need to be filling ourselves up. If we are outputting, we need to be inputting. And so many of us only focus on outputting and we forget about the inputting. And so then we get, you know, burnt out and tired and overwhelmed and stressed and anxious and exhausted and, you know, running on empty and barely holding it together and not doing well and having outbursts and getting angry and, you know, like not being able to regulate ourselves. And we wonder why, because we're doing all this outputting and not enough inputting. So I really focus on, you know, where do I need to be inputting? Because I also love outputting, but I also need to be inputting if I want to keep loving my outputting.
I agree. So what inspired you to do this book? Can you shed some light on that?
A publisher came to me and said, we want you to write a book. And I was like, no, thank you. I'm not an author. And they're like, please write a book. You have so much good content and we want that to be more accessible to more people in kind of like taking what you teach in your YouTube videos and just putting it into like a more compact, streamlined, you know, topic by topic process for people to go through and really just start to get a handle on what's going on inside of them when they are feeling certain ways, when they are going through different things, when they are struggling in different ways. What is going on inside of them? What's going on in their minds? What's going on in their emotions? And really breaking that down using neurobiology and human psychology and then helping people understand that on a deeper level and then teaching them what to do with themselves. Like, I don't come, you know, we don't come with manuals. Like, how do I work this thing? How do I work this being human thing? And so in that book, that was my goal, is to really just give people almost like a manual for what's going on inside of here and what do we do with that, so that we can at least have some significant foundational tools to be optimizing what is happening in our minds and with our emotions.
Do you think COVID has made a profound, lasting imprint in that space?
In which space?
And just mental health in general and the way, you know, in culture itself. Do you feel like there's...
The stats say yes. Different demographics in different ways. I can't speak to it too thoroughly, Michelle, because I haven't done a lot of research on it, but the stats do say yes. I'm hoping that there's been some post-traumatic growth that has come from that, that has made us realize how much we value connection and relationships and time together, and really helping do a reprioritization when so much of that wasn't available to us, we weren't allowed. And there was a lot more isolation that came, a lot more loneliness that came when we couldn't access people.
Absolutely.
And really realizing how much we need that and how important that is. And so using the lesson and the learning from having something removed to seizing it more intentionally when we have it back.
So a lot of your work deals with shame, perfectionism, boundaries, people-pleasing, anxiety, and a lack of confidence, just to name a few. Why did you focus on these types of struggles for engagement outside of the sensitive person? Because I think a lot of your work appeals to so many, and it is part of the human condition, right?
So why I think one of the reasons is because these are all things that I have struggled with and I've really had to do work with. So when I speak to them, I can speak with more passion. I can speak with more depth because it's been personal. And that is one of the secrets with most therapists. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Most of the time, therapists, whatever a therapist focuses on is something that they are passionate about because it is the most relevant to them, right? We are most passionate about the things that are most personal to us. And so I didn't even realize it until I was looking at it. And I'm like, why am I drawn to these things? Why do I want to read more about this stuff, learn more about this stuff, dive into the research on these particular topics? There's so much out there, but I'm drawn to certain things. I'm clicking on different articles. I'm pulling different books from the bookshelf, right? Why is it? And I'm like, oh, because these are the things that are the most relevant to me. These are the things that are most personal to me. And so not everything that I teach has been come from a personal experience, but a lot of it has. And a lot of it has been through working through my own stuff because I was a disaster as a teenager in my 20s. I really didn't like being stuck with me. Oh. I really didn't like being stuck with me. And I kind of came to this point where I'm like, but I'm going to be stuck with her for the rest of my life. So let's figure out how to like that instead of trying to run away from that.
I think people see symptoms of that, but they don't realize that's the core.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with boundaries. When I started really understanding boundaries, and I would tend to say I would call myself a boundary expert because of all the work and the research I've done with it. And I have a really in-depth course on it. And it is one of the, I have a separate course on it. And then it's also, you know, there's a masterclass series in the Shift Society on boundaries and how much boundaries are the root of so many of our problems. If you have a stress problem, most likely it's a boundary issue. If you have a resentment problem, most likely it's a boundary issue. If you have an anxiety problem, there's going to be a lot of stuff that's coming on with boundary issues. If you have an overwhelm problem, as you know, an exhaustion problem, then a lot of it's going to come down to boundaries. If you have struggle in your relationships and feel taken advantage of, feel unappreciated, oftentimes it's a boundary problem. If you feel trapped and stuck in your life, it's a boundary problem. If you feel controlled by guilt, it's a boundary problem.
So if you were feeling anxiety or you felt fear about something, that must be a trick, must be triggering that emotion in some capacity, which would mean you need to do you need to set a boundary.
Yeah. And you need to, yes, absolutely. Right. You need to get clear on where your boundaries are and be respecting those boundaries, but then, and also setting some boundaries. And sometimes we set boundaries within ourselves and for ourselves. And sometimes we set boundaries with others, right? So boundaries are an internal thing for ourselves. Boundaries are an external thing for in our relationships and how we're navigating through life as well. So there's a few different kind of nuances that come with boundaries. But essentially, yeah, whenever something is not going well, right? Whenever we're having a feeling, feelings are information that something is happening. Often if it's a quote unquote negative emotion, it's something has gone wrong. What has gone wrong? And that's kind of like this alarm bell that something has gone wrong. And that's our opportunity to get curious. What's coming up for me? What's going on here? What's happening? Yeah. And then from there, when we have that insight and understanding, then we work on problem solving. What do I want to do about it? What's my plan? How do I want to proceed? How do I want to handle this? And then just taking that step back and being able to consciously and mindfully navigate through life instead of just being reactive, overreactive, struggling, stressing, obsessing, worrying, you know, being angry, whatever that is, really, like learning how to navigate through life in a responsive, mindful, conscious way.
As a business owner yourself, do you see other women business owners, do you see them making a lot of other mistakes?
They make themselves small. And I'm not saying that you have to go out boldly and be this like boss bitch that's like, stepping on others to make them get their way up and like taking names and like doing all this stuff. You don't have to lead in that energy. You can lead in what energy and whatever energy you want to, but making sure that you are stepping into your identity as a leader, as someone who has knowledge, as someone not who knows everything, but knows something about something and can help someone with that. So often, the research shows with women that when it comes to applying for a job, if there's 10 criteria that are included in the job description, if a woman has less than, it doesn't have all 10, right? Is missing maybe one or two of those criteria, research shows she won't apply for the job. Mm-hmm. She's missing one or two of the criteria on the list. Research also shows that people who are socialized as men, if they have one or two of the criteria on that list of 10, they're like, I'm qualified. I can do this. Right. And so it's just a difference in that socialization between men and women. And we really have to just sort of take a step back, and especially those of us socialized women, just understand that there is a lot of internalized sexism. There is a lot of internalized discrepancies between who you are allowed to be and show up as and claim and want and work towards and own as a woman than there is with a man. I'm not saying that being a man doesn't come with its own set of struggles. Absolutely. Again, no one rides for free. But when it comes to this, research also shows that there will, for this gap in the income, this discrepancy in income between genders is not going to be going away anytime soon, not because employers are going to continue to be sexist and unfair, but because women will not negotiate as aggressively for what they want because they don't feel like they are allowed to lean into and grab what they want and ask for what they want and stand firm in what they want. So men will, more often than not, just of course, gross overgeneralization, that men will go in there with the confidence to be like, I deserve this. I want this. I'm going to stand firm and get this. And women are like, can I have it? And someone's like, no. Okay. Sorry. Didn't want to offend you. And I'm again, this gross overgeneralization, and I'm characterizing this, perhaps not completely accurately, but you kind of get the idea, right? That as women, we really have to look at that. Why am I not letting myself just sort of stand firm in owning what I want and asking for what I want and being a little bit more relentless with that? So it's not necessarily the system on a surface level that is holding women back. It's the psychology of our socialization that is holding us back.
That's pretty interesting.
Right?
Yeah.
So I would say, don't go in there, I'm like pretending you know something that you don't, or trying to puff yourself up to make yourself, above or superior, putting yourself on a pedestal. I wouldn't say that's the solution, but I'd say stand firm in what you know. And also let yourself be wrong without it meaning that, oh my gosh, I'll never speak up again because I made a mistake or because I was wrong or someone, proved me wrong in some way. Just be like, okay, yeah. Letting ourselves get up back up and keep going and keep growing and keep asserting and keep being and keep standing. And yeah, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when it's all said and done, what kind of legacy would you like to leave? You can be professional, it can be personal.
I would like two things. I would like human beings to know that how you have been going through life, the struggles you've been having within yourself and outside of yourself, are not set in stone. So many people that I've worked with, so many people, you've seen that in the Shift Society, people coming in and being like, I didn't think it was possible for me to be any different, for me to think any different, for me to feel any different, for me to have any different. I thought this is just the way that I was and there was nothing I could do. And when people are like, start to see that like, oh, there is so much in my brain that can change. It's not magic. It's neurobiology. What we understand about the human brain and how it is very moldable and changeable. And so when people start to realize that, like, I don't have to be stuck in this suffering and in this struggling forever. Mm-hmm. And then when those light bulbs start to go on and things start to change from the inside out, that for me is like, it's magic, even though it's not. And so that part, I would also like to leave a legacy with my children that they are allowed to be who they are. And they're allowed to feel good about themselves. And they are allowed to be successful, and they are allowed to fail. And they are allowed to get, and they are allowed to lose. They are allowed to love, and they are allowed to not always love everyone.
I think those are wonderful.
But still be kind.
That's wonderful, because it's really just accepting them for who they are.
Yeah. Just going through life without all that mental chatter that holds so many of us back.
Well, and then also what message was handed to you growing up? I mean, that's huge. Yeah. And they don't have that to contend with. Oh my God.
I mean, and they probably will, because I am definitely not a perfect parent, but I'm hoping a little bit less, or at least that they have a really good therapist when they're older.
That's hilarious. Well, thank you so much, Julie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Michelle, so much. It's been so good chatting.
If you haven't already subscribed to the channel, please hit subscribe so you can get notified when new content comes out. Please share this with anyone who could be inspired by it, and feel free to post any questions so we can be inspired by new content. Thanks for listening. If you're interested in learning more, visit our website at bakercreative.co.